We go. It keeps coming back. That's good. I like a big reveal. You know what I'm saying? Where you keep something secret and you kind of build it up until, bam, look. Anybody else like that? Oh, there we go. All right. First service, I have like two people raise their hands. I'm like, what's wrong with you people? I mean, and obviously this is something that our culture really does enjoy. I mean, think about the things that we see that are big reveals right now, like this incredible moment of gender reveal parties. You guys are like, we didn't do that in my day. My day either. That was not something we did. You realize I was, the things I researched for a sermon is quite fascinating. Gender reveal parties were started in 2008. Did you know that? So it's a pretty recent phenomenon, I mean, it's not like it's been around forever, but it's when we use cake or piñatas, or sometimes we'll use fireworks or something like that to announce if a couple is having a boy or a girl. And of course, there are funny stories that you can find about gender reveal parties. Like there was a couple I read about, they got the envelope from the doctor that said, the sex of the baby was in the envelope. So they took it to a party supply store and they gave it to an associate there and they said, okay, here's the envelope. What we need you to do is take a box and based on what's in the envelope, put either pink or blue balloons into the box. Now that sounds pretty explanatory, pretty easy to understand, right? Until they get to the gender reveal party and this happens. Now see, honestly, I'm the associate that would have done this on purpose, just to mess with somebody. I mean, I think that's hilarious, You open that box and it's like, wait, I don't know, we're having a clown? I don't know. I mean, it's like, we're going to name him Ronald, middle name McDonald. Fortunately for this couple, the associate did put the envelope in the bottom of the box, so they were able, at least in that moment, to open it, even if they didn't have the big balloons flying up. So, it's kind of funny. And this is all fun and games, these gender reveal parties, until your gender reveal party, true story, starts a devastating 47,000-acre wildfire in Arizona. Isn't that terrible? Or, even more tragically, the one that was using some type of explosives, and the grandmother-to-be was actually killed at a gender reveal party. Isn't that, we may have taken it a little too far at that point. As I was reading about these this week, as again, we didn't do these when we had our children, there was a woman that actually started this trend. She wrote about it in 2008, and she's now since written an article. And the title of the article now is called, "I Started the Gender Reveal Party Trend and I Regret It." She wishes she hadn't done it. We do really like to one-up, though, don't we? We always like to make the stakes bigger and better. I mean, but thinking back to the big reveal, we do like it. I mean, you don't have to raise your hands, but how many of you have seen those videos where the soldier returns from, being deployed and they go and they surprise their kids? I mean, you can raise your hands if you've shed some tears over those videos. Absolutely. We love that, don't we? That big moment. I mean, you go search this and like every one of them, the dad shows up or the mom and the kid just takes off running and just latches on. It's a beautiful moment. But I will say our love for, flair and theatrics can sometimes lead us to very depraved places in wanting a big reveal. Anyone remember the show Maury? Maury Povich? Anybody remember that one? Does anybody remember this show or is it just me? Okay, what do you remember about this?
Baby Daddy.
Baby Daddy, that's right. So for some unknown reason, this was now called entertainment, where you may or may not know the father of your child. So you go on this show, you take a paternity test, and at the end of the show, Maury would get the result, and the famous expression that you would hear him say at the end of that determination was, "You are not the father." And I mean, that's where we let this kind of run off the rails, right? Wanting a big reveal. God help us for ever thinking that this was entertainment. But I do like the flair. I do like the theatrics. In fact, some of you may remember way back in 2016, 8 years ago, we heard that a ministry partner of ours, Hope for Children in Ethiopia, needed a van. And so we took upon us that year to try to raise money to help buy them a van. And we raised, well, let me just show you the video from that day. We saw a need in your ministry that you could use a van. So what we did is we said this van is going to be our project this year. We were told that a good, decent used van would be about $22,000, or a new van would be $30,000. So we set a goal as a church to raise $10,000 to give to you to be able to help you purchase a van, knowing that wouldn't quite get it. We had an idea and we said, okay, but what if we go beyond just the church? What if we ask our friends and families to help? And let's see if we can come up with maybe another $10,000, and that gets you closer to getting that used van. And we did. And so for the entire month of October, we collected money. And so I might as well just tell you, you guys know I like a big show, right?
Yeah, consistent. 8 years
ago. So let me pull out this check that we're going to present today. We're presenting today a check for Hope for Children in Ethiopia for $30,096. I'm consistent if I'm anything. It was a funny moment because I was keeping it very secret. I wouldn't even tell Amy how much we had raised, and she was so mad at me because she's like, you can tell me. And I'm like, nope, telephone, telegraph, tell Amy. We all know that's how it is. And so I kept it from her. And I don't know if you saw in the video, but in the bottom corner, you saw somebody kind of jump up. That was Miss Amy that morning that we announced that. Maybe it was all those years of watching The Price is Right. I don't know. Hearing Johnny Olson or Rod Roddy, you know, waiting for them to say, a new car. Maybe not that one. Maybe this new car. You know, both are examples of things they've done. But the contestants are jumping up and down and clapping and the audience is going nuts, you know. We do like that, don't we? We like the excitement and the energy. As we continue looking at our series called Living the Dream, where we're looking at the story of Joseph in Genesis, today we come to the place where Joseph has his own moment, his own big reveal to his brothers, these brothers that he probably thought he would never see again. And we find in Joseph a man of integrity who had every right to take the power that he had, the position that he had, and exact his vengeance upon them. But instead, what we find is he presents them with forgiveness. It's beautiful. So if you remember the story, we've been here for several weeks. Joseph was his dad's favorite, but his brothers were jealous. They did not like him at all. They thought about killing him, but instead they sold him as a slave into Egypt. He had success and was elevated in Potiphar's house in control of everything. That eventually came crashing down after the false accusation of sexual assault was made against him. He goes to prison, but there he again has success and he's risen up. He's proven himself. He's trustworthy. He's competent. He's reliable. While in jail, he meets some of Pharaoh's servants. He interprets their dreams and their, you know, it helps them. And one of the servants gets out. One of them dies. And the one servant, you know, Joseph says to him, hey, remember me. A lot of good that did. 2 years later, he finally remembers when Pharaoh has dreams and he needs help understanding them. Pharaoh's servant says, oh, this guy. And Joseph comes out. He rightly interprets the dreams. And Pharaoh says, we need somebody like that, that has the Spirit of God on them to help us manage the coming famine that was coming upon the world. And he picked Joseph. And here we have Joseph, little Joseph, almost killed, thrown in a pit, sold as a slave, now rising to second in command of the dominant world power at the time. Pretty impressive, isn't it? Pretty impressive. And where we left off last week, where Pastor Amy, you know, reminded us that he was a gifted administrator and prepared them for the family, here's how it ended. It said this. It said, when the famine had spread over the whole country, Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold grain to the Egyptians, for the famine was severe throughout Egypt. And all the world came to Egypt to buy grain from Joseph because the famine was severe everywhere. I mean, that's pretty impressive, isn't it? A severe famine, everybody's needing to come in and take part because Joseph was so such an incredible steward and administrator of making this happen. But then that's where our story today gets kind of interesting. Because as it said, this famine wasn't isolated. It was going on in a lot of places over the what they would call the world at that time, probably the known world around the Middle Eastern area. And Jacob, who's living in Canaan with his 11 sons, they realize that they also are running out of food. And he says, I've got this plan. I'm going to send my sons to buy food because we don't want to starve to death. Except he didn't send all his sons. In fact, Jacob hadn't really changed very much all these years. In fact, we read this. He still played favorites. Look at this. It says, but Jacob did not send Benjamin, Joseph's brother, with the others because he was afraid that harm might come to him. Benjamin was Joseph's full brother, born from the mother Rachel. That was the two kids that she had. And so Joseph was the favorite. Now that dad thinks he's dead, it falls to Benjamin. And because he has his favorites, he says, all right, you 10 go. It's fine, whatever happens to you, but I can't let anything bad happen to my favorite Benjamin. But the brothers are probably used to this. So they go. They travel down to Egypt. And then let's take a look at what happens next. It says, so when Joseph's brothers arrived, they bowed down to him with their faces to the ground. And as soon as Joseph saw his brothers, he recognized them, but he pretended to be a stranger. Now, who wants to be in Joseph's shoes right here? Oh, yeah, he's got all the power. He's holding all the cards, and they don't know who he is, but he's like, I recognize them. And we might look and think, well, why don't they recognize him? Well, why would they? I mean, if you had sold your brother into slavery, would you ever in a million years expect that individual to be the one you come and bow down to in Egypt? No. And he's changed. We read last week how he had been decorated and clothed in the clothes of Pharaoh. He's speaking the Egyptian language. He's probably clean shaven and got the necklaces and the headdress and all these things on. They're not going to recognize him. They're not even going to be expecting him to be there. And Joseph has the upper hand. What is he going to do? It says he recognized them, but he pretended to be a stranger. And he spoke harshly to them. Where do you come from? He asked. From the land of Canaan, they replied, to buy food. Now think about this. This is an honest answer, right? How many times has Joseph probably asked this question and been given the same answer? He's not surprised. But look what happens. It says, although he recognized his brothers, they did not recognize him. Then he remembered his dreams about them, and he said to them, you are spies. You have come to see where our land is unprotected. Oh man, this is getting good, isn't it? First, we see that Joseph remembers the dreams, the ones way back in Genesis 37, the dreams that got him in trouble. He remembers them, and we haven't heard about them for a while. They happened way a few chapters ago, but here they are again, and after all he'd been through, it's kind of impressive that he does remember them. That he's kind of been hanging on to them in the back of his mind. I mean, with all he's gone through, it would be easy for him to say, I just misunderstood that dream. I was way off on that interpretation. Or, you know what, I just had bad pizza last night. That was a crazy dream. But Joseph remembered, and it has come to pass right there in this moment. What's happening? His brothers are coming in. And just like in the dream where he saw the sheaves of grain bowing down, what are his brothers doing? Bowing down right there before him, just as the dream predicted. But then the question is, what would he do? What would you do? Joseph, in this moment, he doesn't have a tearful reunion. He doesn't break down and go, oh my gosh, I'm so glad to see you guys. Where have you been? I've missed you so much. No, he says, you're a bunch of spies. You're here to scope out the land to see what damage you can do to Egypt. Now, why would he do that? Why would he go to all this trouble? Why not just say, hey, guys, it's me, Joseph, and I'm still mad at you for what you did, so get out of here. I'm not selling you anything. He doesn't do that, though. You see, one thing to understand is kind of the relationship between the Egyptians and the Canaanites. Canaanites weren't respected. In fact, the Egyptians considered them uncivilized and untrustworthy. So this accusation would have been something founded for the Egyptians. And as he accuses them, what do? No, that's not us. And then they begin to tell their story. They say, you know what? We're just 12 brothers from Canaan. In fact, there's one brother at home, and there's one brother that he is no more. It's a nice way to say we sold him into slavery, but he is no more. And Joseph goes, he looks at him, he says, I don't believe you. And he says, I'm not going to believe you until you go home and you get that other brother and you bring him back to me. And then he throws him in jail for 3 days. And then after 3 days, he says, all right, I'll make you a deal. I'll let 9 of you go home, but one of you has to stay here in jail with me. One of you's got to stay here, I'm assuming as collateral. One of you's got to stay just to make sure the rest of you come back. And he says to them, if you're honest men, let one of your brothers stay, and the rest of you go back, take the grain for your starving households, but bring the youngest brother back so that your words may be verified and that you may not die. Well, that's bold language, isn't it? This they proceeded to do. What's Joseph doing? Why is he doing this? I love this because I think it shows a little bit of the mind of Joseph. He was a skilled administrator, and he is shrewd. Don't be mistaken. He knows what he's doing here. Why put these brothers through all these tests? You know, a bit earlier, we didn't read this yet, but if you look back just a chapter or two, when Joseph gets married and he has his own sons, one of the things he does is he names his first son Manasseh. And it says, it's because God has made me forget all my trouble and all my father's household. But yet now here his father's household right in front of him. How much has he really forgotten? And what's he going to do about it? Before the brothers head home, they decide to have a little conversation. Joseph is there, and they don't think he can understand because they're going to speak their native language, and Joseph's been speaking to them in the Egyptian language. But Joseph remembers how to speak their language. And it says, they said to one another, surely we're being punished because of our brother. We saw how distressed he was when he pleaded with us for his life, but we would not listen. We're getting a real picture of how really great guys these are, aren't we? That's why this distress has come on us. Reuben replied, here, I love Reuben. Reuben's like, wasn't me. Didn't I tell you not to sin, he says, against the boy, but you wouldn't listen. Now we must give an accounting for his blood. They didn't realize that Joseph could understand them since he was using an interpreter. Again, the shrewdness of Joseph in this moment. He turned away from them and began to weep. But then he came back and spoke to them again. He had Simeon taken from them and bound before their eyes. Okay, so we see the internal struggle that's going on in Joseph a little bit. He does care. He's listening to them. He understands. But he's not breaking yet, is he? I'm going to see this through. We get the first glimpse, though, also of the heart of the brothers. They haven't forgotten what they've done. In fact, this is about 20 years later. What do you see? For 20 years, they have been carrying around the guilt of what they have done to Joseph. Everything positive, everything negative that happened, they filtered through this understanding of whether God is pleased with us or God is getting us because of what we've done. And that's exactly what's taking place here. We sinned against our brother, and this is nothing more than God's judgment. And as Joseph hears this, it brings him to tears. But then he binds the brother that's staying, and then they head home. The story has so many more twists and turns because as the brothers start their way home, they start looking through their stuff, their bags and everything. And you know what they find? They find the food, but not just the food. It says their hearts sank, and they turned to each other trembling. Why? Because they had found money. All the money they went to pay for the food was put back in their bags. And what do they say? They're trembling and they say to each other, what is this that God has done to us? Isn't that fascinating? All this guilt they've been carrying, they're seeing God through this guilt, and they are just looking to see, we're in trouble now. They didn't know Joseph had put it there, but he did. They get home. Dad is not real happy. Why? Because they have outed the other son. Why didn't you just tell him there were 10 of you? What are you doing telling him there's a younger son at home? Now, if you go back, you've got to take Benjamin, my favorite. And dad's just like, no, not at all. You're not taking him back. And there's a little back and forth. I mean, one of the brothers comes up at some point and says, well, what if I guarantee Benjamin's safety with the life of my sons? Well, that's real bold. Way to go, Dad. You can kill these two if he doesn't come back. Man, father of the year there. But eventually what happens is the food runs out. And they're left hungry again. And they know if they're going to eat, they're going to have to go back. And finally, Judah comes to Dad and says, Dad, look, Jacob, I will take full responsibility. I will. If something happens to Benjamin, it's my life that I will lay down for his. Now, quite a change, right, from the other brother that's like, no, just take my sons, to no, 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 this is me. It's a beautiful picture there, right? Foreshadowing Jesus, a picture of Christ here in this midst, being willing to lay down his own life. So they get more money. They take the original money as well, and then they take gifts because they're thinking, we don't know what's going to happen. They're going to be waiting for us. They're going to accuse us of stealing, and we're all going to die. So they go back. They go back to Joseph, and you got to love him. He's not done yet. He says, I got a few more tests for you. One test being this, he invites them all to a banquet, to a feast. And at this feast, he arranges them at the table from oldest to youngest. And of course, that's just playing mind games with them, right? They're like, how does he know? How does he know who was born first and second? He did. And not only that, he's got Benjamin at the end, and he takes Benjamin and he gives him 5 times what everybody else had. Now, why would he do that? Because he's showing favorites, right? And he wants to see, how are these brothers going to respond when somebody shows favoritism to Benjamin? And evidently, they did okay. They didn't do anything. And so the feast is over. They eventually purchase their food, and they are on their way back home with what they need. But this time, Joseph has one final test. He has a silver cup, and he puts it in their belongings. After they left, Joseph sends his men to stop them and say, somebody stole my cup. Of course, it wasn't stolen. But the brothers deny it, and they say this. They said, if any of your servants is found to have it, he will die, and the rest of us will become the Lord's slaves. Bad thing to say, because as they search the bags, they find Benjamin's bags, and what do they find in there? That Joseph has placed the cup. Well, now they're in quite a pickle, aren't they? So they're forced back into the presence of Joseph. Judah goes in and makes a very impassioned plea on Benjamin's behalf, offering his own life for that of Benjamin. And that was it for Joseph. He had seen everything he needed to see. Look at what happened. It said, then Joseph could no longer control himself before his attendants, and he cried out, have everyone leave my presence. So there was no one with Joseph when he made himself known to his brothers. He wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard him, and Pharaoh's household heard about it. So Joseph said to his brothers, I am Joseph. Is my father still living? But his brothers were not able to answer him because they were terrified at his presence. Then Joseph said to his brothers, come close to me. When they had done so, he said, I am your brother Joseph, the one you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. Wow, what a reveal. I would like to have been there for that. What a beautiful, beautiful moment. As I read through this story, and it's a lengthy story, several chapters at the end of Genesis, and we just kind of picked some verses along the way. But a couple things jumped out at me as I read this. One of the things I've already kind of alluded to, and it's just this, the power of guilt. The power of guilt. I mean, as you read through the story, you see these men, these brothers dealing with these tests. And how do they respond? Without fail, over and over again, It's from a guilty conscience. Every time they say, God is paying us back for something we did 20 years ago. Can you imagine carrying around that level of guilt for 20 years, knowing what you did and looking at every negative thing that happens in your life as God getting you back for what you've done? I mean, obviously they'd been concealing it. They shared that sin, that secret among themselves, hoping no one would find out. But look at what holding on to that for so long did to them. Look at what holding on to that did to their view of God and how they constantly lived in fear of retribution, of divine judgment on them. Every time something bad happened, they just went, oh, God's given us what we deserve. We did it. We deserve it. I mean, go back to the verse we read where they talked about, surely we're being punished because of our brother. We saw how distressed he was pleading with us for his life, but we wouldn't listen. This is why distress has come upon us. I mean, that's some deep guilt right there. See, what we have to understand is guilt will always distort our image of God. And a distorted image of God will always push us further away from God. Will always push us further away. They expected divine retribution. How close do you think they wanted to get to that God that they fully expected to just smack them every step they took? But how healthy is that image of God? I wouldn't want to worship that God. I wouldn't want to be near that God. And really, it's not the image of God that we see. You see, Joseph may have been the one sold into slavery, but the chains of their guilt were no less a slavery of their own making. They were enslaved to their guilt. It kept them from fully understanding who God was, but it also shaped that fear that they constantly lived in. There's a book called Joseph, Understanding God's Purpose, and the author writes in that, it says, guilt is such a powerful emotion. Many of us struggle to overcome it. Even though God has granted us his forgiveness, the weight of past sins can hinder us from living in the freedom that comes with full recognition of God's grace. I mean, just think about yourself for just a moment. Have you found yourself enslaved to guilt at any time? Do you know the weight that guilt can be? How guilt will push you further away from God instead of drawing it to you. Now, don't get me wrong. Sometimes healthy guilt can move us and motivate us when dealt with appropriately. But how often do we sit in our own guilt, assuming God is out to get us, when the remedy is simply confession? I'm convinced that one of the greatest tools that the enemy has against God's people is to convince us to keep things hidden, keep things in the dark. Why? Because there's no healing in the dark. There's no release in the dark. There's no freedom in the dark. But I think about the people that I have been with, that I have counseled through the years, that have had those things that they've tried to keep hidden, and the moment they confess them, they bring them into the light, you can almost physically see a weight being lifted off their shoulders. Why? Because in that moment, we're not met with a God who is ready to go, that's right, let me pounce on you and beat you down, you worthless, dirty sinner. No, that's not the image of God we get at all, is it? It's what we sing about, grace. Grace, God's grace, grace that is greater than all our sin. What's the image? It's the image of the Father in the story of the prodigal son, that as soon as we turn, what do we find? We find God running towards us and embracing us with his love and his mercy. Just simple confession. And in our story, Joseph gets to see that. He gets to see that in his brother Judah. We didn't read it, but in this passage, there's this impassioned plea. It's a really long thing that Judah is before Joseph, and he's saying, let me tell you why. I'll give my life for Benjamin, willing to lay himself down. And in that moment, Joseph can look and see, wow, these brothers have come so far. These aren't the same brothers that sold me into slavery. There's been a transformation within them. One author I was reading this week talking about this moment said, there's no more moving example of true contrition and repentance to be found in Scripture than right here. Unless, he said, it's the parable of the prodigal son. And isn't that a beautiful moment? So what do we see here? We see, man, the power of guilt in our lives. And really, we begin to see that confession can help take out that guilt. What's amazing is sometimes we look at guilt and we assume there's a price to be paid for it. And what we forget is Jesus has already paid that price, hadn't he? He's already done it. Second thing I saw in this was just simply this. There's a lot of tests going on here, aren't there? A ton of tests that Joseph is putting them through. And sometimes we look at these tests as bad things. Now, they're terrible, don't get me wrong, and we don't go searching for them or seeking them out. They're not fun to go through. They can be absolutely horrific to endure. But just because we go through something difficult doesn't mean it can't refine us and draw something out of us in a deeper spiritual way than we could have done before. To know something about God, to experience something that without that trial, that test, we would never have been able to experience. I mean, look at the test the brothers went through. Joseph had, again, shrewd businessman here, shrewd guy. He had arranged things so much to replicate the moment when his brothers sold him into slavery. They had every opportunity at the end to take the 10 of them home, leave Benjamin behind. They had an out with Dad because, hey, that little turkey over there, he's the one that stole the cup, not us. Why did he do it? So yeah, we left him. He had set this scene up so perfectly to test them to say, are they the same people? Would they take the opportunity to rid themselves of the new favorite son in spite of the grief it would bring their father? He gave them multiple times to take the easy way out, save themselves, and leave him behind. And who could blame them? But they didn't. The brothers who had been so willing to kill and eventually sell Joseph had changed. And it was what Joseph put them through that revealed that change. Not just to Joseph, but they were able to see themselves that they had changed. They weren't the same people they were before. But like I said, it's not like we go seeking these tests and trials out. No one enjoys them. But trials do help us understand who God is and ourselves better. That's why I think we've got this crazy passage in the New Testament that says, consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, when you face trials of many kinds. I mean, who writes like this? Because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. Joy in trials? Sure. Tests will come. They don't necessarily determine whether we have faith, but they can certainly show us the type of faith we have and help strengthen that faith that's already there. There's one other thing we see here in the story of Joseph, and it's just the power of forgiveness. The power of forgiveness. Joseph has his big reveal. We just read it. I am Joseph. Can you imagine being in that moment? What's going through the brothers' minds? Yay! No. Oh, ooh. A lot of emotions, I'm sure, flooding them in that moment. I mean, they're probably thinking first and foremost, we are in for it now. I mean, who could blame Joseph if he didn't? 20 years later, given the opportunity to right a wrong done to you, how many of us might not take advantage of that? He had all the power. Who could stop him? What could be done to him? Nothing. And yet, what does he do? He forgives. Not only that, when you keep reading the story, he says, go get Dad, bring him here. We're going to give you good land. You're going to continue to be able to be shepherds. We're going to take care of you. All your needs will be met. You won't have to worry about anything. My entire nation at my disposal will be at your disposal. You're not even going to make him suffer a little bit? I mean, seriously. No, what a reversal. And what's crazy is that in Joseph's time, that wasn't common. Forgiveness was not necessarily expected. I mean, why do you think the rule back then was an eye for an eye? Because if somebody took your eye, then you could do that back and forth. Now, the reason they said eye for an eye is they didn't want it to go further than that. It was to put limits on revenge and vengeance. And even today, forgiveness can be seen as nothing but a weakness. Why would you forgive? Make them pay. Make them pay. Oh, God, help us. When we see that in people around us, in leaders around us, God, help us. The story of the Bible, the story of people who follow Jesus, is a story of forgiveness. And I think we forget sometimes that it's not just guilt that can enslave us. Unforgiveness left unattended will turn to bitterness and end up enslaving us as well. Do you know that? That unforgiveness will enslave us. And what's so crazy about forgiveness is sometimes somebody wrongs us, you know. Lee does something to me. And I get mad at Lee and I'm wronged and all this. And I'm mad. And what do? I stew. I think about it. I can't sleep at night. I mean, I'm just consumed with it. Now, Lee, on the other hand, he's already moved on. His life is moving on. He's hanging out with Tricia. They're enjoying family time. They're just, he's working on a new car, rebuilding a classic car. You know what he's not thinking about? Me and the offense. Who's in bondage there? This guy. See, we think forgiveness is about them. Forgiveness is not about them. It's about us and what's happening in us. And as the people of Jesus, we're called to be people of forgiveness. I mean, think about the number of times that Jesus talked about this. On the cross, he looks out and what does he say? Father, forgive them, for they don't know what to do, what they're doing. When the disciples said, Jesus, teach us to pray, he said, when you pray, forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. He told the story of the forgiven debt. And he said at the end, those who have been forgiven much, forgive much, love much. All the forgiveness we're talking about is when we understand what Christ has done for us, we find that, yes, we need to experience that forgiveness as well. And we begin to understand that forgiveness is the path to freedom. If we're having trouble forgiving, it may be because we need a better view of Christ and what he's done for us. Now, one word here, that does not mean putting ourselves back in abusive situations or toxic situations. I love what Joseph shows us here. He wanted to see, have my brothers changed before he entered back into relationship with them. And had they changed? Drastically. And then because of that, Joseph, he was going to forgive anyway, but then he took the next step of reconciliation in that relationship. So there we have it. Joseph was able to find forgiveness. Isn't that amazing? The testing of the brothers, the guilt confessed, forgiveness offered, this big reveal that I love, and they all lived happily ever after. Well, maybe not quite. We've got one more week here. And we're going to see what happens once Dad comes to Egypt and then what happens once Dad dies. Because Dad, if you're the brothers, you're thinking Dad is the dam holding back the vengeance. And when Dad's gone, what is Joseph going to do now? And what Joseph says to the brothers gives us a beautiful picture of how he understood God's working in the world that I think will be a great reminder for us as well. So until next week, just think about the things we've said today. The power of guilt that can easily be overcome with confession. Maybe you're sitting in the middle of a test and you're wondering where God is. God can redeem those tests. God can bring beauty from ashes. We keep saying that every week. And then maybe there's forgiveness in your life. Do they deserve it? Probably not. But you do. You deserve to experience the freedom that comes when we are forgiving people. Let's pray. God, thanks for the story of Joseph. What a beautiful story. Pushes us to the limits of maybe what we want to do. Because God, we prefer to keep things quiet, keep things in the dark, even if it means carrying around the guilt because sometimes we're afraid what will happen if we speak it. God, when we're going through the test, I think it's easy for us to forget that it's through the test that we understand the character and nature of our faith, and we begin to understand more about you. And God, in forgiveness, help us to be a people of forgiveness, people that keep short accounts, God, and people who are willing to demonstrate the same forgiveness that we've received to the others around us. God, help us to take this story, to live in it this week, and to just model what we see here in Joseph. What an example, a great example of a Jesus-type character in the Old Testament. We love you, God. Thank you for the transformation that you continue to bring about in our own lives. And it's in the name of Jesus that we pray.